Hey, Sens fans, this is Stuntman Stu, and you're listening to the Six Sens Podcast.
Good afternoon, hockey fans in Ontario and the nation's capital. This is the Six Sens Podcast. We have some fiddles in the background today. We're on location at Ottawa's favorite Irish pub. How are we?
We're doing great. You know, I'm so excited, Tim. I'm sitting here with Deborah and John from Cobden. They came in just for the podcast live today. Everyone's real excited and enthusiastic. We're going to be auctioning off a fishing trip with Jesse Winchester and his mother. Ice fishing. And, you know, I'm just chowing down here on some of these Halifax Heat hot wings, and they're just fantastic. I'm wearing my Chris Kelly jersey for old time's sake.
Yeah, it's going to be raffled up at our booth at the Port Dover Fish Fry this coming weekend.
Do you guys see that? That's former Mayor Larry O'Brien just came in to say hi.
Who's got the trivia?
I'm just waiting for the Cokester to come in and start signing MMA photos.
Yes, sir. Hey, we do it big here at the Six Sens. We don't go cheap. We have a big budget, and we're going to use it.
I can't get over the photos. We've also
managed to get our hands on the big poster Mike Fisher vignette that was outside of Scotiabank Place. We're going to be raffling that one off.
Oh, it's a great day to be at CKCU today.
Oh, yeah,
this is good. With the fiddles in the background. It's nice.
It's awesome. Touch.
A little appropriate, we're talking about raffling things off as the Sens continue to raffle off their players to the highest bidder.
Brian Murray. You know, I was actually talking to Graham off air. We actually, the three of us know each other in a capacity other than just this podcast. Big surprise. But so.
Well, that's what you get when you put up an ad on Craigslist, right?
Wanted one bilingual speaking male to contribute to podcasts. And then
Tim gets those photos of like the Republican Senate representatives.
Yeah.
Half naked.
But yeah, it was funny because like I was talking to you after the Chris Kelly trade and I was just like, man. I think Brian Murray has carved himself out a nice little niche in the NHL. He's like George Clooney from Up in the Air. He's like a rebuilding initiation specialist. Like, it's sort of like a GM has to rebuild, doesn't know where to start. Okay, well, let's bring in Brian for 3 weeks, and he'll just, clean house right up and dump a bunch of salary and get some picks, and we'll be good.
And it wouldn't even be unprecedented for this organization to trade their GM to another organization for this rebuild movement, right?
Yeah.
Rick Dudley to Tampa Bay? We just fucking loan him out?
Except there's only so many Rob Zamners to go around. You want to talk about male pattern baldness.
For some reason, I just want to talk about Chris Conto so badly right now for the rest of the show.
So, Brian Murray, getting back to the Senators, he's gone out. He's traded Chris Kelly. That was a little unforeseen amongst the hockey circles in Ottawa. He's also traded Jarkko Ruotu and Brian Elliott. Kudos to Francois for coming out at the beginning of the season saying, hey, Brian Elliott's a guy I think they might move sometime this year. And I kind of laughed it off. I didn't think that couldn't envision that ever happening. But kudos to you.
Yeah, I didn't imagine Elliott would have any value to anyone else besides us at this point, even then.
And I mean, let's be honest. I'm not going to sit here and say that Craig Anderson is sort of a long-term goalie you move forward with, like sort of like a legitimate bona fide number one guy that you're comfortable. But I think that to get Craig Anderson back for a guy like Brian Elliott, who I feel Brian Elliott's play has been substandard for the better part of a calendar year dating back to last year, and who I feel effectively has played his way off the team. I think to get Craig Anderson coming back in that deal where you're in a position to give a guy like Anderson playing time as an incentive to maybe stay here for the next couple of years, this is a guy who I think moving forward over the next year or two in a tandem situation with Robin Lehner while Lehner develops, I think Craig Anderson is infinitely more serviceable than Brian Elliott, and I really like the trade actually.
Oh, absolutely. I think I think we're on agreement here. This is a good trade. By all accounts, Anderson was having a pretty rough year in Colorado. He had some personal issues, had to go back on a road trip to Colorado. The Avalanche have floundered, especially in recent weeks. So maybe this is just an opportunity to buy low on a goalie who needs a change of scenery. Hope Elliott can be, you know, somewhat serviceable at the professional level for Colorado. And in the meantime, if he plays well, great. Maybe we flip him before the deadline. Who knows, right?
Ultimately, it's a low-risk move, right? Like, the guy had a knee injury at the beginning of the year, and by all accounts and standards, most of the people of Colorado who were connected to the team said he struggled with his technical abilities after his knee injury. I guess he tried to compensate for the injury, and it kind of screwed up his game a little bit. But sure, it's an extended opportunity for the organization to get a first-hand look on a daily basis and determine whether or not this is a guy who they could sign for the next little bit.
It was so nice to see a Senators goalie not only keep us in the game last night, but single-handedly win it for us as well.
Was that not the worst game of hockey you've watched in a while, though?
Oh, it was horrible.
The Sens-Edmonton game last week was pretty bad, too. But, yeah, that was pretty bad.
But
chippy.
I mean, just going, kind of wrapping up the whole Craig Anderson thing, too, just kind of a thought that popped into my mind is, for the next year or two, I mean, we're going to need to sort of fill out the NHL roster with some veterans here and there via free agency and whatnot. And I think ideally you'd like to bring in veterans that, you know, can play relatively well and keep your team moderately competitive. And I think Craig Anderson fits that mold kind of perfectly in the sense where we're probably not going to end up taking a cap hit higher than about, you know, at the very upper end, $3 million a year on that guy. So he's not going to kill your cap situation. He'd be very serviceable. He'll be sort of like that grizzled, like third to fourth starting pitcher type guy that some baseball teams like to bring in and can sort of give you those 12 to 15 wins a year and eat innings. Like, I think Craig Anderson is sort of like in that mold.
That's actually not a bad parallel, like the 200 inning just workhorse.
John Main.
Yeah, like a Jeff Supan kind of player.
Yeah, exactly, like, exactly. Randy Wolf, yeah, that type of guy.
Does his job. No, I agree with you. I'd like to see the organization probably go out and sign a couple of those inexpensive, low risk, but like at the same time, there's some upside to be had. And they could maybe eventually at some point parlay that down the road. And I think those are the kind of guys that you want to sign. You don't want to sign those expensive players who will cost you in dollars in term, and then you're not able to flip them if your team struggles anyways. So
yeah, so I think it's those type of guys that on a team that's probably, if we're being realistic, going to be quite bad for at least the next year, maybe two. The type of guys that I think on a contending team are slotting in more so on a third or fourth line, but given the state of the Senators, will be able to get some second line ice time. And then hopefully if you draft well, by the time the kids sort of start to develop their game in two or three years, these veterans that you've signed, say, just for argument's sake, a guy like a Brooks-like type of player, then, you know, those guys start to slot in where they should on the third and fourth line. And I think that's when you start to see yourself kind of becoming competitive again.
So looking forward here, what kind of money, what kind of term do you give a guy like Anderson? And that is, if he even wants to stay in Ottawa to begin with, like, you'd think that maybe there might be an inkling to stay with the team that sought you out in the trade market. But what do you guys think about that?
Well, you threw out the number $3 million. I think that's probably maybe a tad on the high end. But yeah, it's probably a reasonable expectation, maybe something close to $2.5 million in that range. But from Craig Anderson's standpoint, Ottawa is the perfect opportunity because he gets to take that number one slot and run with it. And he's had a bad year in Colorado. So if he can wind up with an extension and after having a bad year, like, it's in his best interest to sign. Because if he struggles down the stretch, like, there's no impetus to sign this guy. And if he hits the market that is saturated with backup goalies and the likes, he might not get a good contract.
Yeah, I'd have to say I agree with you 100%. And I think the other thing, too, that I mentioned or that we talked about before starting to record was the fact that he's not going to find a much better, from a playing time standpoint, he's not really going to find a much better situation than the one he finds himself in right now in Ottawa, which is you have a bad team. They're looking for a guy, essentially, let's call him, for argument's sake, an innings eater type of goaltender. He'll get all the playing time he wants here because we're not really going anywhere anytime soon. And so, yeah, I mean, I threw out $3 million earlier just because I feel that the Senators generally have to slightly overpay to retain
the cap floor.
Yeah. And aside from that, just to attract free agents, because I don't necessarily know that we are the most attractive market to come, attractive destination to come play in just yet. But yeah, I think, you know, maybe 2 years, somewhere between $2 and $3 million annual cap hit is very reasonable for a guy like Craig Anderson. And then you take it from there.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right, especially since he sounds like a guy, from what I've come across, he likes to see a lot of shots, and that's exactly what he's going to see with the Senators' defense over the next few years, especially if these rookies are going to be playing serious NHL minutes next year. But the other thing I wanted to ask about Robin Lehner, do we actually think he's going to be playing backup or in a tandem role with Anderson? After the Elliott trade, he alluded to the fact that he needed time to season himself in the AHL. Is it possible that Robin Lehner just becomes the starting goaltender in the A and another service serviceable backup is found on the free agent market?
Yeah, I think that's entirely within the realm of possibility, but I think, I mean, what is, Lehner's still only 19, right? So yeah, I could see that happening, and I think there are probably concerns about, especially like we saw with Marc-Andre Fleury's development, where the Penguins kind of rushed him a little early. Now, thankfully, it's ended up working out for both the team and the player, but that came really close to being almost a disaster when Fleury first came in the NHL, so I think you have to be careful with a young kid like Lehner, that you don't want to stunt his development too early. Even though the fact that he shows every intention of wanting to play in the NHL as soon as he can, you have to be careful in terms of his development. So yeah, I mean, if you sign some guy to play in a tandem situation with Anderson, I don't know, Theodore or someone along those lines,
Tebow, not Tim, Jocelyn.
Yeah, I mean, someone, you know, just kind of a serviceable backup. I mean, that's fine. If you want to give Lehner his 50 or 60 starts down in the AHL and you'd rather do it that way, that's fine too.
I think you also have to stress the virtue of patience, because if you look at a situation in Montreal with Carey Price, like, that's another goaltender who came in, flourished early, and then his development kind of like stagnated a bit, right? I think we have to fall into that trap of looking at Lehner and worrying about rushing him or overanalyzing every game that he plays, you know? Like, the kid just needs a lot of playing time.
I think it's good for him to get some action in the NHL, so that way he understands what the expectations are like up here, what the routine is like, what it's like being a professional hockey player in North America, maybe before going back down to the AHL, so he has something to work his way back up to, if only if it's to see a lot of action on the ice down there. But what concerns me is, how is this guy, who has been outspoken about the AHL fans and the league in general in the past, going to do down there?
I think that's part of his swagger, though, right? Like, he wants to be the villain, you know? You look at what he did to, was it Poulin?
Yeah.
And you see stuff like that, and it's just, I think he wants to be talked about. Like, he wants to have a buzz around him, you know? That's the impression that I get from Robin Lane.
Yeah, I don't think it's an arrogance. I think it's a swagger, you know? He's, and I like that, you know? I'd rather have a guy like that who's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder, who's going to say stuff that you'll be like, oh, don't know. I'd rather have a guy like that than a guy like, it's frustrating, I'm hurt again, you know? Right? Like, take your pick.
Yeah, like, it's definitely...
Well, you know, it's frustrating. I'm in the... I do the hot tub like twice a day, and I want to try to play soon, but it's frustrating to be hurt again. Like, I'll take Lehner over that any day.
Yeah, it's nice to have a guy who actually wants to be noticed on the ice for doing something positive out there.
Speaking of positives, Ottawa last night for 4 hours was the worst placed team in the NHL.
Statistically, although the Leafs may have given them a run for the 60 minutes plus OT, that
God.
Was...
God. Wow.
That team's in big trouble, eh? I mean, those Leafs are just terrible.
Hey, and the best is talking to Leaf fans right now. Like, a couple of my friends are Leaf fans, you know, people originally from Toronto and whatnot. Fully convinced they can get a first-round pick for Clark MacArthur.
What?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're not dealing exactly sometimes with the most knowledgeable of fan bases either, which makes it even more entertaining, right?
No, I actually watched the Leafs game with a friend last night who is a big Leafs fan from the GTA, and some of the things that came out of his mouth, like, normally right around this time, I'm kind of, you know, I'm more interested in watching a good hockey game and seeing some of the kids and, you know, kind of expecting a loss. But last night, watching the game with this guy, I wanted nothing more than the sentence just to wipe the floor with the Leafs. Hearing things like, oh, you know, the Leafs are only one Brad Richards away from winning it all. You know, some of these things, like, you know, do you think, you know, Christian Hansen's going to be enough to get Brad Richards at the deadline plus our first round pick?
I know, like, it's just ridiculous. And you look at him and you go, like, what planet are you living on?
Are you serious? Like, where do you get peyote that good? Like, I don't understand it. And, like, how is it distributed?
Oh, man. Yeah, it's just brutal.
You were mentioning to me on the car ride in, though, Tim, that Brian Burke, I think it was on ESPN, where Pierre LeBrun was stating that Brian Burke had offered both first-round picks and something else for Zach Bogosian.
And a prospect.
God. Yeah. Is there a plan in Toronto, or is it just cut and
paste? I don't know. I have no idea, but I'm starting to think. I have no idea. And the thing is, it's like you were saying to me, Graham, like, what is the big rush in Toronto? There's not going to be attendance issues if that team's bad. Like, well, why doesn't he take the time to do it properly? So what? People are all excited that they got Gardner in that Beauchemin pick. But the thing is, in the Beauchemin trade, the thing is that Lupul contract is an abomination. Like, it's horrible.
Yeah,
he signed through 2012, 2013 at 4.25 cap hit.
But it's not. It would be risky for a number of other teams, but because it is Toronto and they have that abundance of financial resources. They have the wherewithal to bury that guy in the minors, and it's not going to kill them, right? Like, that's just, it's not like Jonathan Chichu, right? Where you're worried about buying that guy out. Like, that guy is just going to be buried with the Marlies if he can't perform well.
He seems to just be flying by the seat of his pants with
all these moves. Exactly, yeah.
And like, he brings in Versteeg and Beauchemin and these guys, and then he turns around and flips them. And these are the same thing Ottawa fans are concerned about. Like, oh, you know, what free agent vets are going to want to sign here if we're burying guys in the minor and trading them off and whatever else. Like, look at what Burke's done. I mean, he's consistently, you know, just spitting up his humble pie over and over and over again. And it's disgusting. That team's in disarray.
Well, it makes no sense, right? Because he brings in a guy like Leupold. And I think Chris Versteeg is a useful player. It's not his fault that Toronto is incredibly shallow down the middle. Like, there's no centerman on that team whatsoever. Like, I think Chris Versteeg is going to go to Philadelphia and he'll do quite well. And I think he's a way better player than Leupold. So, I mean, I don't know what the logic is behind some of these moves.
I think Toronto came to that conclusion that Versteeg is a good player, but he's not going to be a top six forward. He's a good third line player, but he's never going to be a building block. And I think that's a realization that they came to. So they just figured they'd flip him now. So
what do we think of the kids in Ottawa system, at least? What do we think about the plan here so far? We're getting a glimpse. We've had probably about a week now where we've seen some of the youth playing some games. I don't want to get really into expectations that much, but just surface value, what you've seen, thoughts?
I've really been impressed with Eric Condra. Just looking at the whole collective, the thing that's really impressed me, and it makes it more palatable to watch the Senators these days, is just the effort level that these kids exude on a nightly basis. Like, it's almost like I had grown accustomed to watching like a complacent group of veterans and underachievers play, and it's just that was more agonizing than watching like a bunch of young kids trying hard and losing. I'd rather watch what we have right now than what we had for the majority of the season thus far.
The energy level in that Boston game was unbelievable. I watched the Nesson feed, and the announcers couldn't get over how hard the Ottawa Senators were working, and it's great to hear that from the opposing team's broadcasters, right? Against a very talented team, they probably didn't have any business being in that game, and ultimately they didn't, but energy level was there. It was great hockey to watch.
I mentioned last week's podcast when Tim, you asked the question about which kid we would like to see, and I mentioned I'd like to see Condra get a shot. I was happy that he did. I think he's shown some nice stuff. Obviously, foot speed might be an issue for him moving forward. But in general, overall, with the kids, I mean, they're not going to hurt you right now. So you may as well have a team of kids. And even though none of them are probably going to end up being all-stars or superstars in this league, I think at least you're going to play an up-tempo style if you have a bunch of kids on the roster. So they're not going to hurt you. And for the foreseeable future, I think it's encouraging in terms of having getting younger and maybe a little bit more energetic as a team.
I've been really impressed with Bobby Butler, perhaps the best Bobby we've had on the first line since Kadelski.
All right, I got one for Butler here. It's amazing the past two goals he's scored. I don't know how he's been able to finish or even shoot the puck. He's been on such awkward angles on his skates. I have no idea how he's able to get those shots off. I read in the Sun this morning, Jason Spezza likens his ability to hang out in the slot to that of this guy named Danny Heatley. That's the comparison Spezza drew, and he's looking good out there. I'm not ready to anoint the guy, 40 goal scorer in the NHL. But it's a situation where you wait and see what the kid's capable of, and then we'll set the bar.
It's nice to see a winger actually finishing off some of Spezza's passes, though.
Yeah, it is. I think we have to be careful. You know, Bobby Butler is 24 years old. I don't know. I don't think there's much upside there in terms of him skill-wise being able to get much better. But if he can play on a line with Spezza and hold his own weight and finish some of the chances, great. You know, he'll be a cheap player and stuff like that. But I think Butler's play and the fact that he's netted a couple goals speaks volumes in terms of how much better Jason Spezza can make people on the ice. And Danny Heatley hasn't scored 50 goals since he's been traded to San Jose and did it twice in Ottawa.
Well, that's not his fault, though. That's not Danny's fault.
But I'm just saying, and obviously there are a lot of other factors, Tim, that are related to this, but I think it's kind of interesting that Danny Heatley had two 50-goal seasons playing with Jason Spezza in Ottawa and has gone to San Jose and played on, by all accounts, a line that is just as talented as our pizza line was a few years ago with Marleau and Thornton, and he has not scored 50 goals yet since he's been in San Jose. I think that's kind of an interesting storyline that gets lost here, and I think it's kind of important to remind people sometimes, especially because Jason Spezza still seems to be a lightning rod, even though I think that his play has been fairly outstanding this year in terms of developing an all-around game.
It's quieted a little bit recently, too, I think. And last night, when he scored that goal in the shootout, like, he just looked like the cock of the walk when he was skating back to the bench, eh? Like, he looked confident. Like, that was something he needed to do for his team. It was going to be him who had to win the game, and he did. And I thought, you know, this is a good thing for Jason Spezza moving forward. I just want to point out one other thing. Jim O'Brien had a hat trick in bingo two nights ago. There's another guy biting for another call-up. Maybe he'll take over for Kovalev when Kovalev's shown the door. So, folks, we'll be more roster spots opened up for the kids in the coming weeks. You know, we've seen a lot of gutting so far. What more could possibly be done?
The names being thrown around quite often are obviously Filip Kuba, Chris Neal, Alexei Kovalev, and Chris Phillips. Perhaps the biggest name on the list that kind of strikes me as a bit odd is Kuba, based solely in part on his play this season. I think that's a bit surprising. And I've seen on a number of websites that people have thrown out the suggestion that maybe he's a candidate to be bought out. And I think that's the most asinine thing you could possibly do with Filip Kuba at this stage.
Yeah, no, I agree. Because whether Kuba, I mean, he's been absolutely horrendous this year. And I agree with you that I just don't see a market for him, especially when he's signed through next year at $3.7 million. I'd have a hard time seeing a team want to take on that salary, especially given that he's been nothing short of terrible this year, if we're being blunt. And yeah, I agree with you. Like, why would you buy this guy out? Because we're not going to be in a position anytime soon to be competitive. And really, let's be honest, we'll probably be bad next year. Does Kuba make you that much worse? Like, it's you know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense, right? To buy out a guy, have that count against the cap, and realistically, you're not, overall from a team standpoint, you're not going to improve a whole lot out of not having that guy on the roster and having someone else slot in his spot.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong here, but we'd be carrying the buyout from Kuba longer than we would carry his actual salary. So from that
but
aspect
it saves him a little bit of real money. And that's, but I mean,
saving real money is important right now, though.
Sure. I think it's a classic case of a team selling low. This is, he hasn't played well this year, but he's also a player who, had he not been injured last year, he would have put up two consecutive 40-point seasons as a blue liner. Do I like him that much as a player? No, but that has value in the NHL realm. So I think maybe if you give this guy an offseason to get himself in better shape, he wasn't really afforded that opportunity last year where he had the back surgery and then he had the broken leg in training camp. So maybe if you give that guy the opportunity to get well, maybe you'll have a situation where he'll turn it around, kind of like where Milan Mihalik was in, like, you know, the past 2 or 3 weeks. And maybe that's a guy who can fetch something of value at next year's trade deadline, and that's the only reason why I would hold on to him.
Yeah, that body of work is pretty it's good enough to get for another team to see value in that player just because of his stature as, you know, consistent, reliable NHLer.
And again, with Kuba, he hasn't given the team he's playing on right now, I mean, not a lot of these guys, especially some of the veterans who probably need to be surrounded with talent to be effective, are being put in a position to succeed a whole lot. So if Kuba finds his way to a contender, you might be able to get more production out of him rather than on a team the Senators are right now.
Wasn't it in one of the New York papers within the past few days where they had mentioned that John Tortorella, Kuba's old coach in Tampa Bay, the Rangers had expressed interest in Filip Kuba's services?
It was Larry Brooks, wasn't it? Yeah, whatever it was. But Wade Redden worked out so well for them.
Yeah. I just don't know if I'd be like jumping up in the air and like fist bumping like a Jersey Shore kid if Filip Kuba was moved for like nothing. It'd be like, yeah, okay, there's cap room, but you're probably not going to get an asset that's going to have any kind of value whatsoever. So I would be okay with seeing this team hold on to him for a little bit, because I mean, if you're not going to get anything at all, I'd rather have it at the end of next year.
Well, and I think the other issue too is if you move Kuba, that creates an opportunity to keep Chris Phillips around, which I don't personally think Chris Phillips should be in the future plans of the organization past this year.
Yeah, I don't want to throw a wrench into everyone's plans here, but Brian Murray said on many occasions that you know, he expects some players who aren't even in the system right now to be contributing players next year, specifically Jared Cowan and David Rundblad. That's two slots on the defense that have to open up for these kids to play. Where are those going to come from if guys like Kuba and Chris Phillips are still hanging around collecting paychecks?
Well, if those two come up, I think you have, what, 8 guys on the blue line who are under contract?
Well, Campoli would be an RFA, so they'll probably walk away from him, I'd imagine.
But he has.
But actually, he's probably been our best defenseman this year.
Exactly. I think that's a guy who probably has some inherent value there.
And Brian Lee has been, you know,
He's
been rosterable for the past month. I guess
he's been rostered.
I like that.
Yeah,
Tim's creating words on the fly, but
that's awesome. That's a great expression. I'm going to use that now. That girl was rosterable.
She could be a notch among many. I mean, you don't brag about it, but one guy here, Graham and I were talking about this on the car over. Not like we rehearsed the whole show on the car ride over, or
just only you, eh, Tim,
or on MSN before. Nick Foligno. Is this a guy who we should be looking at moving at this point? Is there a future in Ottawa for Nick Foligno?
It's a tough situation because I look at that guy on a bad team. He's probably going to be like one of those Clark MacArthur kind of guys where he's actually playing top 6 minutes. So he's probably undeserving of it based off his skill set alone. But I can't envision a situation in which he'll ever be that top 6 forward for Ottawa. I think his career is kind of like plateaued a bit. Not somewhat that dissimilar from like a Vermette or any of those other prospects like a Patty Eaves, you know, like they just hit that plateau and they hit that wall and they don't get better from that point in.
He's got hands like a caveman.
Yeah. Well, finishing abilities, I guess, goal scoring abilities. I think he's an NHL caliber player, yep, as a third or a fourth liner on a contending team. But I don't know. It might be at some point in time better for the organization and Nick Foligno to go their own separate ways, if for no other reason than change for change's sake.
I think he's like something you could throw into a trade package just to make it more sexy, to get something back that you really need, whether it's like a skilled offensive player or he's just an asset to be dealt.
No, absolutely. I think one other thing that's important to look at too is the teams that are going to be finishing, you know, 7th, 8th in the conference this year and are going to have nice draft slots. Maybe they're not too interested in developing, you know, a mid-range prospect who will take a couple years. And that's where an opportunity for a guy like Nick Foligno and one of our other picks, or, you know, whether it be Peter Regan, end up getting moved. Maybe a team just wants a warm body back and doesn't care too much. It's nice being on this side of the coin for once.
Definitely.
Yeah, it could be like a deal comparable to one like Rafi Torres type guy that got traded to Buffalo last year. I think you're looking at a comparable return if you were to move Nick Foligno this year, I think.
Were you guys surprised at the timing of the Chris Kelly thing?
Oh, hugely.
It's weird to see how many fans, I find from my observations anyways, that more fans were upset with the Chris Kelly trade than the Mike Fisher trade.
He got way less pages than the Sun, though, the day after. There was no 11-page special. It's true.
It's kind of tough, you know, because if you had known, like, if we had known that it was in the plans to move Chris Kelly, then in a perfect world, maybe you just hang on to Mike Fisher or whatever, you know? Like, I think Mike Fisher's a good hockey player, but I think he's the type of guy that, again, in the right situation, is one of those guys that on a contending team really brings a lot to the table. But on a team as bad as Ottawa is right now, you're not really getting much added benefit from having either of those guys on your team right now. So, but I was surprised at the Kelly thing just because Fisher had already been moved. Then you figure like, okay, well, they'll probably just for now by default have Kelly center the second line or whatever it is for the next year or two until they draft a couple of kids and whatever, you know, just kind of he'll hold the fort type thing. So I was surprised that they moved Kelly as well.
Yeah, I'm a little bit different. You know, I think that guys like especially Ruutu and Kelly, they're kind of a little bit more specialty players, guys that you use to, you know, to play around, you know, a really, really solid core on a contending team who will have, you know, beneficial skill sets for the playoffs. Ottawa's not in that position. People who have that skill set are better suited for contenders. So, yeah, I was a little surprised to see Kelly get moved. But in the grand scheme of things, he's probably better off.
A lot of fans were hoping that his hockey IQ rub off on all the kids coming out.
If he's so smart, why can't he score more goals?
Yeah. I think that's one of...
Figure it out.
Again, Graham, we talked about this too. And I think
Francois,
this,
you have to have intangibles.
Well, that's what I... And
we need some leadership.
Well, exactly.
Where are we going to get the leadership?
But exactly, right? Like, I think that this whole notion around, you know, mentoring the kids and this, I think that is something that is a misconception that, I mean, I think you can learn work ethic from someone, but, you know, Chris Kelly being a smart hockey player is not going to make Bobby Butler be a 30 goal scorer. You know what I mean? It's just, it's like our Tennessee Titans fans up in arms about, well, let's keep Kerry Collins around so he can mentor the next quarterback. You know, like it's just, you don't get this in other sports. I find it really, really interesting with hockey sometimes.
So one of the players who's been struggling, I find, since the All-Star game has been Erik Karlsson. And he's kind of had some criticisms, whether it was from Pierre Maguire on the air on 1200 in the morning or Gary Galli calling into the afternoon program. Are you surprised at the amount of criticism that he's received lately? And should this guy be categorized as untouchable? I know we've talked about this in one of the previous podcasts, but it seems like it's a fitting time to maybe discuss it a little bit more.
Considering what else we have on the Sens roster, I think that no one's untouchable. Obviously, we don't need to go over and over that. The right deal comes along, certainly, and depending on how some of these other prospects pan out and what they materialize into, then perhaps Erik Karlsson is replaceable. Maybe not right now, but in the future. But, you know, I think that maybe one of the problems with Erik, you know, his defensive play hasn't been anything close to stellar. Does it bother me? No, not too much. You know, he was never really brought in as advertised as a defensive defenseman. And I think there's probably a lot of pressure on the guy right now to create offense. And he's maybe getting some mixed messages here. Like, you know, he got sent to the All-Star game for his offensive skills. So clearly he's doing something right that makes him one of the, you know, elite defensemen in at least the Eastern Conference. But then we hear guys like Galli saying that, you know, this guy would be riding the bus on any other team in the NHL, which is a bit of a, you know.
I think that might be a little bit of extreme, but.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, that's, you know, way too much. Yeah, he has some defensive shortcomings, but who has to correct them? I mean, Graham pointed out before that on one of the other podcasts that he's got some difficulties pivoting to his right, correct? And there might be some issues there.
Yeah, I think that was Pierre Maguire.
Pierre
Maguire
brought
that
up that point on 1200, yeah.
Yeah.
He's been hammering away at that detail for, the past 2 months, I think?
Yeah.
So you were just channeling Pierre?
But it just becomes really obvious because you watch that Detroit game and Franzen blows by him on the right-hand side and you're like...
Yeah, I think the one thing that's interesting is... when I was talking to a friend, you know, I like Erik Karlsson. I kind of have a love-hate thing going with Erik Karlsson. I think the hate part of it is like, why are people jumping the gun and just making this guy an untouchable when we're in a state where if the right deal is to be had, you should be prepared to move anybody type thing? I think that's where the hate comes from. The love, obviously, the guy is a very dynamic offensive player. When the puck is on his stick, he's almost mesmerizing to watch sometimes. When the puck is not on his stick, the guy is, I mean, he's an adventure out there.
I think the word untouchable is just thrown around like way too often and way too casually by some people within the organization. It's fair, I think, to say, hey, look, Erik Karlsson's one of our best young players. It's going to, you know, it's going to take a premium to pry this guy away from a roster. We're not going to give him away like we are with some of our other veterans. Like, we're going to need premier players who can come in and play right away to replace a guy like that.
And I think one of the interesting things, too, is a lot of people will tell you, and back to this conversation I was having with my friend, he's like, well, you can teach defense. You can't teach offense like he has. And I think there's probably some truth to that. I think that with proper coaching, he can learn sound defensive positioning and whatnot. Let's not fool ourselves into thinking he's ever going to be a good two-way defenseman.
Well, you know, I've been fortunate enough to go to a bunch of games in December and January, and every time I left those games, the only thing I could say was, you know, the only reason to drive yourself out to Scotiabank Place is and pay good money to watch the Senators is to watch Erik Karlsson. He was the lone bright spot, the lone entertaining element on that team. You know, maybe he wasn't Mr. Responsible out there, but sure, you know, he was good money for your buck. And, you know, again, untouchable, whatever. I mean, it's not as sexy as saying he's good. We don't want to trade him, but we will if we have to or if we get a good enough offer, right?
And that's it, right? I think... we have to be realistic about this thing, and I'd hate to see fans and the organization sort of jump on this bandwagon too quick. You know, we have to be careful, and I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that, I mean, he's essentially, since Martin Havlat, probably the most dynamic talent we drafted in the first round, so that's almost a better part of 10 years. So I think there's a bit of a romanticization going on right now where it's like, wow, we finally have drafted a first-round talent that is a first-round talent, and like they want it to work out for him in Ottawa so bad. But like we say, I think if the right deal is out there, and especially a deal where you can bring in a legitimate top six forward or a two-way defenseman, I think you at least the conversation needs to be had. That's all I'm saying. The conversation needs to be had.
Now, how much do we want to chalk up his defensive issues to just the size of him and the nature of his game? Like, he's not going to overwhelm anyone with his nastiness or, you know, scare them to dump the puck into the other corner because he's going to crush them through the glass and into next week. Do you think maybe he's having some difficulty adapting to, you know, how to handle bigger, stronger NHL players while still kind of playing that very, you know, smart thinking man's defensive game like Lidstrom, you know, much more aggressive with the stick, better body positioning? Anyone?
A lot of the issues he gets into in his own end is he'll bail out to avoid contact. So I think the size thing might be an issue. Now, how quick you can get him to fill out is also an issue. So that might be 2 or 3 years before the guy's actually at a size where he feels comfortable to take physical contact.
Hey, Graham, what were his giveaway takeaways?
I think he had the most takeaways for defense, but he's top 10 in the NHL for giveaways. I think he has like 61 or something.
Yeah,
like
that. And that doesn't surprise me.
He plays that kind of game. Like, I'm not going to lynch a guy for that.
No, exactly.
Because you can't stifle what he brings to the table. Because if you do that, he's essentially no dimensional.
Right.
Are we talking about Spezza right now? Sorry.
But that's actually a good parallel, because I think within the next couple of years, Carlson's going to be one of those targets. He's going to have a target on his back from that sect of the fan populace that says, he's too soft. I want someone who's bruising. I need to see something visually to justify why this guy's on the team. It's like that whole like Canadiana inherent...
The Don Cherry school of thought.
Oh, it's like that inherent kind of racism.
You can only win a Stanley Cup with good old Canadian boys who can't skate and can't shoot, but hit everything, you know?
Exactly.
If you're not from Pembroke, then you better be blocking shots with your face and fighting everyone everywhere all the time.
At some point, he'll get labeled as not a winner.
And it's too bad, but I can see that happening, definitely.
That's the nature of dinosaur thought in the NHL, unfortunately. Headlined by Don Cherry, who I read was actually going to be probably coming back for 2011-2012, unfortunately. Oh, man.
I cannot listen to that guy.
Oh, the troop? That troop? I can't even talk politics on this show. I'm not allowed. But that, little ceremony they had before the game and watching those soldiers rappel. Now, anyone who's ever done rappelling in their life, we went to a high school that had, some rappelling activities, and, that stuff's not rocket science. Can't believe that was their big thing. Like, we've seen Spartacat come down the ropes faster than those special ops guys, right? It was just atrocious. Dave the Tiger Williams parading around in a tank, like some sort of artifact, throw up. You can cut all that. I'm sorry.
No, I thought it was brilliant.
It was a weekend for props. You had the dunk competition last night.
Oh, fuck me.
They should have that in the NHL breakaway contest. You should have to dodge.
We had it with freaking Ovechkin there running around with a cowboy hat and sunglasses the one year with that creative breakaway thing. I mean, what a joke.
Oh, freaking, you look like RuPaul out there. It's just disgusting.
He did.
Is that a last-minute Halloween costume that you needed before your Mike's Hard Lemonade kegger? Terrible.
The best is I was at the barbershop a couple months ago and I'm flipping through a GQ and there's like that feature on Ovechkin and there's like a one picture of him wearing like that Euro type like trunk bathing suit. Guys, and he's got he's dancing with two girls, like bottle of Belvedere vodka in his hand and like a bit of a pot going. It was just like, holy shit, like this guy is just unreal.
Speaking of props, what do we think of the PK Subban, the Jeff Skinner jersey swap? Where does that rank on your scale of brilliance over the years, and how much media attention that got?
I thought it was kind of cool. And someone asked me if there's one jersey you can't take off in the NHL, it's the Montreal Canadian sweater. I thought it was kind of cool. I think he was just trying to get the fans into it. I didn't have a huge issue with it. I mean, you can only make hockey so sexy, or the NHL skills competition so sexy, right? So
PK struggles so hard to be liked.
I know.
Can we just give him this one?
Can we just like
can we
him?
Just concede this?
Yeah, man.
Listen, I've got no problem with the guy. I don't mind PK at all. I think he plays a great game. I actually read a great Bob Gainey quote that said, everyone should just shut up and play against him. That's it. And I fully believe that. I have no problem with the guy whatsoever. There's far bigger issues in the NHL than PK's running his mouth.
Yeah. I think it's kind of good for the game, right? You get these colorful personalities. I think it's what it kind of makes it interesting, right? Because, I mean, I think in some ways, hockey and, there's been kind of an absence of smack talking. It's been kind of a vanilla sport in terms of off the ice stuff for so long, in terms of rivalries and smack talk and stuff like that.
But at least
it's kind of good, you know. I kind of like
evolved
it
to that NBA level where guys are patting each other on the ass, before the tip off, and
Kobe and Shaq pretending they really love each other for the cameras and stuff like that. It's just
one big bro loving fest.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
So I was doing that Islanders radio show, I guess, on the community radio before the game last week that you so nicely passed the buck to me, Graham. Thank you. Those guys were great. But here are these guys in Long Island, and all they want to talk about is, in their words, the brouhaha between the Penguins. The the fighting and the trash talking and Lemieux coming back and lashing out at the league. This is big interest stuff for Americans, it seems, and Canadians as well. Globe and Mail had a huge article in the Saturday paper just telling you how to explain the brawl to your kids, even when they start asking questions. Yeah, I'm serious. You're squinting at me, but I'm serious. It's there.
That was kind of interesting, because I can't stand fighting in the NHL. I don't think it has a place in the sport. I don't understand. In every other sport, fighting is not allowed. I don't understand why it should be allowed in the NHL. But I will say, how self-indulgent and egotistical was Mario coming out and making that grandiose speech about, I'm not going to be involved with the game if they don't clean it up, blah, blah, blah. Like,
I think he got caught up in that fine line between being an ambassador for the sport and being an owner.
Yeah, he went Melnick.
Yeah.
That was like Melnick-esque.
But it wasn't...
quite as self-serving, I don't think.
No, but that guy's not going to come out. Like, Matt Cook's an employee for his team, so he's not going to come out and throw Matt Cook under the bus for being a dirty player, you know? Like, you can say, yeah, Matt Cook's hits, they all happen within the context of the game, but it's, you know, it is a bit hypocritical. But am I surprised by any of it? No. Like, any owner would do the same thing that he did. Like, if that happened to the Senators, I'm sure we'd be sitting here complaining as well.
Yes, it's easy for us to sit around and say, you know, I'm not a fan of fighting in the game. You know, the three of us have been over how much we hate stage fighting on this show to no end. But, you know, even recently we were talking about our favorite Mike Fisher moments, and Graham brings up the scrap with Hanzus, right? And, you know, it's all those scraps, those big brawls with L.A., like the Herme incident and the Philly one. You know, these are great team-building things, and, you know, they happen once a year, as long as, you know, you don't have guys going into the stands and whatever else and, you know, really, really lopsided fights, like whoever Chris Neal fought in that Philly one.
Was it Somic?
Yeah, he just caved him in.
Yeah.
Just like, filled him in.
Like, you know, that kind of stuff.
It was like
ugly.
Pedro. It was like Pedro versus Don Zimmer.
Oh, man.
You remember that?
Probably the best fight of all time.
Amazing.
Just the skull grab. It was like a finishing move in Mortal Kombat. What was the name of that little
I'm an embarrassment midget to the Red Sox, and I want to apologize to my family. Damn, what a clown.
Oh,
do you guys remember the name of the little midget that David Ortiz and Pedro Martinez brought into
Nelson
the
Nelson Della... Nelson... Oh.
It was like De La Rosa or something.
Della Cruz? Della Cruz or something along those lines. The guy was like a massive celebrity in the Dominican Republic. Apparently Pedro put him in a suitcase a couple times. I'm serious. No, that guy was all world, man. Yeah, he was hanging out with those 2004 Red Sox. Nelson Della Cruz. Yeah, something along those lines.
It would have been great to see Nelson run up and kick Zimmer after
he's
that.
Actually,
in the balls
he's
actually
he's unfortunately that I think that little guy's passed away now. Actually,
read that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That was awesome though. I remember he was in there with all the champagne and everything when they were winning those pennants and stuff like that.
Oh yeah, he was the Red Sox Tom Chorosky Buddha.
He was. Yeah. Oh, man. What a cast of characters that was, eh?
How fun would it have been to be in Boston during those days?
Wow.
I mean, to see, like, that guy come into a bar.
Like, Pedro. I mean, could you imagine? Pedro had the soul glow going, and he was still, like, dominant. And
Kevin Millar was playing. I don't know where he found those baseball skills. Like, that was unbelievable.
Yeah. No, what an amazing cast. What a real magnetizing sort of team that was, eh, for those couple years there in and around 2000, from about 2003 to 2005.
Yeah.
Man, just a very entertaining team to watch on and off the field.
Except for Mark Bellhorn.
The worst part to come out of that from that whole run is all this fanboy fanaticism with the Boston sports culture. Ever since that run, like, that's what I attribute to, like, this whole masshole fucking movement. I can't stand that shit.
The thing that's unfortunate is, you know, like, you and I have been Red Sox fans since well before this whole, and we get grouped in with the rest of these bandwagon fans now.
He's just, being a Red Sox fan, like, I share a birthday with Wade Boggs, which is why, not the same year, which is why I became a Red Sox fan initially, back in the 80s. But, you know, there's such a great culture. Like, I've done a bit of traveling. When you bump into guys around the world, you know, you can go talk Red Sox baseball with them, and it's amazing. But, you know, here in Canada, you're out at a bar, you see a guy with a bee hat on, you go up to him, you say, hey, what's up? He says, oh, no, man, it's just a hat, not really a fan. Or they say, my name's Brent, that's why I got the cap, and it's ugly. But do you think that's why maybe Boston went out and got, you know, these guys like Thomas Caberle and Rich Peverly? You know, if they can somehow mask that, market that as, you know, hockey's version of Gonzo and Crawford. I don't know. The Nesson people were all over it. That's all they could talk about was the big acquisitions.
I mean, I think the Caberle trade is a good trade for Boston. I think he definitely brings a lot to the table.
That's kind of been foreshadowed for, what, like the past three, four years almost, it seems?
Yeah.
Since Brian Burke's been to town, actually.
Yeah,
what a return for the Leafs, too. That's just amazing. Like, that's way more than I thought they'd get for Caberle. I was kind of upset.
Yeah,
but I think it comes with the expectation that Caberle is actually going to re-sign in Boston. So,
well, that's it. And obviously, the proof of that is Wheeler getting moved out as somewhat of a cap casualty, I think.
And it's a price that you can afford to pay because, yeah, you've essentially stolen Toronto's two top 10 picks, right? So I don't necessarily have a problem with teams trading, you know, like high draft picks so long as it doesn't strip their system barren.
Yeah, I mean, on the basis of the return for Caberle, like, are you guys, I mean, I'm starting to get a little bit anxious and uneasy with the fact that, it's looking like Phillips might not waive the no trade clause. Are you guys starting to get it as uneasy as I am with that whole saga as it's going?
The one thing I'm seeing in the media, though, is that like Bruce Garriott tweeted a number of days ago that Chris Phillips came out and declared that he wants to stay. But nowhere in the context of the story does it say he demands to not waive it. Like, he doesn't insist. He never mentioned it in the article or in any of the quotes that he had with the media that he would be opposed to waiving. And a lot of people are just making the assumption, oh, Chris Phillips wants to stay. What are we going to do? And like, people are so ready to throw the guy under the bus if it doesn't happen. Would I like to see him get moved for a pick? Yes. Will I burn an effigy of Chris Phillips on the streets if he doesn't go? No.
Yeah, I mean, it is his right to have a no-trade clause. He's entitled to use that no-trade clause as he sees fit for his own personal situation. I think it would be kind of disappointing when we're in a position to probably get a decent return for a guy like that, that he would not waive his no-trade clause. Because assuming that Brian Murray is not the GM moving forward, no new GM is going to come in and retain Chris Phillips. Like, that's going to be one of the first guys that a new GM comes in and goes, okay, well, you know, moving on and putting my stamp on the team. You know, thank you so much for everything you've done for the organization, but I encourage you to explore other opportunities and take your talents to wherever your talents will be taken.
Chris Phillips might have a legitimate reason for not wanting to go elsewhere. Like, we don't know his personal situation. And I look at Brian Murray, and I think he has to articulate the thought that if he doesn't believe Chris Phillips is going to be part of the future, then he has to tell Chris Phillips right now and say, listen, I respect your decision not to waive, but I have to tell you right now, we don't plan on bringing you back come July 1st. So regardless of whether or not you move now, you're not coming back. So you should be thinking towards your future. Like,
because a good playoff run on a good team for Chris Phillips would
boost his marketability.
Exactly, right?
That's like,
so, and that's why I think, you know, and who knows what advice he's getting from his agent or whatever, but if I was his agent, I'd be blowing up his phone right now being like, you have to get to a contender. You have to hope that you can go on a deep playoff run and play physical hockey and try and parlay that into a big contract.
Look at how much money Mike Commodore got paid. Like, that boy is set now, right? And Chris Phillips is arguably more established defenseman without the the Stanley Cup ring. But if he can get himself deep on a good team this year, then certainly he can expect some Commodore-type dollars. And like, look how much money we paid for Gonchar at 35. Certainly Chris Phillips at, what is he, 31, 32? He'll get paid again as well. Like, he's still got another one or two contracts left in the NHL. And if he wants to stay, if he really wants to help this team rebuild and stay, that's great. That's the kind of guy who I want to have kicking around. But in the meantime, excuse yourself for a couple months. Go play some hockey. Get us a draft pick in return and come back in the summer.
Yeah, and just following on that, Tim, I think the only like remote, minute possibility that Chris Phillips is retained next year is if he does agree to kind of do this for an organizational benefit standpoint, waive the no-trade clause so he can get something for him, and then you bring him back for whatever in the foreseeable future. But of course, we've outlined previously that the roster composition just might not allow that at all, but... Yeah, I think I agree with you in the sense that, if he doesn't waive his no-trade clause, there's no way that you can justify bringing that guy back. The only way you can justify retaining him is if he's willing to sort of do this for the organization, go play somewhere else for a couple months, and we allow us to get something for him.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that Phillips is certainly going to be more serviceable and useful in a rebuild than a guy like Kuba or Chris Campoli or even Brian Lee. And so there's a guy that I would immediately like to retain, certainly ahead of those other guys, right? And spots are going to have to open up, just a matter of where they're allocated.
Well, that's the difference, right? I think Chris Phillips could help facilitate a rebuild by bringing in a highly valuable asset, but at the same time, he could also help facilitate a rebuild by staying as part of like the current on-ice product.
Do you guys have problems with collusion? I don't. I'm sick of this team being left out in the cold. Make it happen.
A nice little gentleman's agreement?
Yeah. Kachuk, wait. I mean, these are honorable, you know, Hall of Famers. If they're willing to do it, then certainly Chris Phillips can as well.
But I am getting uneasy that he's not going to do it. With every passing day, it seems like it's not going to happen.
I think there is
a market out there for him, and I think there has to be a deal that can be made within, you know, that's just a phone call away from Brian Murray. And I think the big issue, the big stumbling point is Phillips, whether he wants to go or not.
Do you not find that this whole thing's being blown out of proportion, though? Like, I just think it's like one of those stories it's like a subplot to a season that's gone awry. And it's just, you know, it's something that's so easy to write about. And it's just one of those things that every day, like, guys are going up to him, hey, so have you decided on what you're going to do? Like, personally, I think that Chris Phillips has already made up his mind. And I think management already knows the decision. And I think it's going to be like one of those closed door things where it's like Brian Murray finds a deal that he likes. And then he goes to Chris Phillips and says, This is the deal I have. Are you willing to go? It'll be like Heatley to Edmonton.
But you know what? I think Chris Phillips has made up his mind, and my gut tells me he's not going anywhere.
Yeah, that's what mine says as well. And like I was watching the Leafs game last night, obviously, and they were talking about Clark MacArthur having contract negotiations next week. And I thought, what a brilliant time to have contract negotiations. You simply tell your client, this is the only time you'll negotiate a possible extension. Afterwards, it's no good. And you flip the player, or at least attempt to, or make them uncomfortable, or whatever you have to do to get them to leave town for an asset in return. Obviously, Phillips is going to be a little bit more difficult with that no trade. But you have to do what you have to do. And I'm glad to see him gauging his interest before the deadline. And like you were saying, Graham, I think the reason why Phillips has generated so much discussion here, it's like he's one of the longest serving senators we currently have on the roster, right? You know, he's been the guy rumored for the longest to be on his way out. And it just so happens that he's still here and all the other pieces around him seem to have fallen. And we're just waiting to see what happens with him. So when did the Sens make a move and pick up Zenon Konopka? There's a good boy. He plays the 67s.
That is exactly the kind of thing I'm looking forward to this summer. Zenon Konopka,
sure.
Offseason fodder from Don Brennan, championing.
Shit. Let's go with this.
Fucking grit and sandpaper, bring him in. You know,
kick some ass, take some names.
I was looking for like an absurd amount of third and fourth line players. Zenon Konopka would be just an ideal fit in Ottawa right now.
Zenon Konopka has posters of Mary Lemieux in his house. He's an adult. You know, you don't go giving guys like that professional contracts.
At least he cares about his teammates, like, making money. Trevor Gillies got fined $35,000. He's got a family with three kids. How is he going to get by?
Trevor Gillies is lucky he's not bagging my groceries right now, all right?
So, the NHL trade deadline's coming up. I believe, what, the 28th?
Yep.
That's a Monday. So we'll be in studios before that goes down, so maybe we can preface that. Although, with the way that Brian Murray's actually peddling talent, we might not have anyone on the roster by that point.
21 trades this year already.
Yeah, and some of the high-profile guys that are going, the guys like Eric Johnson and Chris Stewart, that's crazy.
It's awesome. It's good for interest. I like it.
Yeah, definitely buzzworthy. But anyways, thanks for listening to the show. Boys, been a pleasure.
As always, glad to be here.
Skate the canal while you can.